Time for another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to welcome back Bob Tomisch, recently retired horticulture extension specialist here at the UW-Madison, and great to have him back, and certainly I hope you'll join in if you have questions or comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. Bob, welcome back. Now you're a retired guy. It's good to have you back. You're going to keep doing shows with us.
Oh, yes. Haven't slowed down a bit.
In fact, you were all over the state.
The last 2 weeks here, I committed to doing some pruning workshops. So we've been to Rhinelander, I've been to Superior, I've been to Grantsburg. So I got a good chance to see what the state is. Everybody's really anxious to get out there and do something in the garden.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering as you looked around the state.
I talked to one person that had some radishes in and some spinach and things like that. Those that have been using plastic or these small little hoop houses, they're getting thick growth in there. You know, the sun is right. We've got to wait for that soil temperature to warm up. I did notice the forsythia were starting to bloom here on campus. So I think once it happens, after we get through this cold spell, we can really get out there and do something.
I think, at least in parts of the state, there's another week of it. But
well, the ice is out all the way to Superior, I can tell you that part. Although I saw snow in ditches and things like that. But we're at a greenhouse up there, and they've got stuff on the shelves. They're just waiting, because everything's about 2-3 weeks behind right now, and they've been trying to hold their plant material back, especially some of the broccolis and cabbage stuff like that people want to set out early.
Well, Amy in Whitefish Bay has a question for you, so let's go to Amy. Hi, Amy. Amy, are you there? Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. Now we've got you. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have what might be kind of a weird question, but I have a lot of success growing peaches, and I have a great peach tree, and I've planted a number of cherry trees, apricot and pear as well, and we have a lot of success with them, and they bring a lot of fruit. But what I'm wondering is it too late to spray the trees or treat them with dormant oil? Because I've never done that before, and I'm wondering if it's necessary or if you know anything about that.
Okay, with dormant oil, in the past we always said it was an annual event, but we're finding that with some of the dormant oils, we're harming some of the good insects. So we're saying apply it if you need it. And what we're trying to control there are some of the mites and some of those types of little insects. And you can tell if you have them in the fall when you're harvesting the fruit, right where the stem attaches, it looks like somebody took a little fine sandpaper for about, maybe a half inch around the stem, and then it healed up real rough. Sometimes you can see it on the twigs. It looks like somebody took sandpaper to the last season's growth on the twigs, and they look real rough. If you have a problem...
I've never noticed it. I just had been reading up because I'm kind of a rookie. I'm creating a orchard here, my little yard orchard, and I just didn't... I wasn't sure, and it said to treat it, and I'm like, I've never done that, so I thought I'd ask.
I think you're safe yet. I would just be real vigilant. Watch for it. There's some very good literature out there. You can go on the internet or even look at the extension bulletins we have, which will show you some of the symptoms.
Okay.
Over the years, I've seen a few instances. We were up a couple of years ago in Siren area, I believe, doing a pruning workshop. And as soon as I looked at the twigs, they looked unusual. It looked like I said somebody took sandpaper to them, and they looked abrased, and that was just from the feeding of some of those mites.
I had trouble finding anyone that could prune a peach tree, so I kind of had to do it myself. It was a little scary.
That's because we don't write bulletins about growing peaches here in Wisconsin.
No.
If you live in that little part up there, what happens is your season comes late enough, and they blossom, and it'll get zapped by frost.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple of apricots, and I bet that this week they will be in bloom because they bloom about 2-3 weeks before the plums even. And I think I had two apricots on those. But right up there in Door County in that peninsula area, you have a little better success than we do in the rest of the state.
Well, I'm actually in right by Milwaukee. I'm just about 10 miles north of downtown Milwaukee in that Whitefish Bay. So,
That.
The other whitefish.
The other banana belt.
Correct, yeah, the other banana belt, absolutely. No, we do, the peach tree does wonderfully. It absolutely, we had bushels and bushels and bushels of peaches. So we're trying apricots and pear this year. We don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, give it a shot. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Well, it's good to hear.
Yeah, that somebody's having some success. So usually we say we don't even plan on, you know, growing peach trees. There are some you can try, and usually about the fourth or fifth year, they get nailed by a cold winter, and we're back to starting from point zero.
We have an email. A person's leaning toward a wild bird habitat, but am worried about, let's see, what is it? Messy berries just a few feet away alongside the concrete patio. Do you have any suggestions or ideas? Berries that cling into the winter would be ideal.
Yeah, so there are some of the flowering crabs we have now have a smaller fruit, and those berries do not stain like some of those that are purple. That's kind of the color that often you see, like the mulberries and some of those. They have a strong purple color, and they're the ones that tend to stain. So I look at some of the flowering crabs that have a smaller fruit on, and they'll hold the fruit all the way now, all the way into the season now. Some of the others, American cranberry with the red mm-hmm. fruit on would be another good one. Scott Craven has a bulletin on, I think it's called Landscaping for Wildlife. And,
yes.
And that's the learningstore.com, and you can take a look at that.
Yep, go to the UW Extension. Well, just go to learningstore.com. I think that's it, and you go right to it. She wondered about hascap, money berries, some sort of upright juniper.
Junipers would be good. They tend to have it's actually a small cone rather than a berry. We call them berries.
Yeah.
And the other one I'm not real familiar with.
And Kathy in Eau Claire had, and this is a question I'm sure a lot of people have noted, or a situation at least that they've noted. I have lots of rabbit droppings left in the garden from the winter. Can these be tilled into the soil?
Yeah, you can work those in. And instead of tilling, I always encourage people to take a spade or a spading fork and actually turn over that soil mm-hmm. and get those materials down. But, yeah, those small amount of droppings you have there. If you have a rabbit or have rabbits, in that case where you have a large amount of volume of manure, we would encourage you to compost or put it down fairly deep in the soil.
Jill and Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. My question is about, I want to plant a hackberry tree for my grandson, Waylon, and I was just wondering where I can purchase one of those here in the Madison area.
I would check around some of the larger nurseries, not the box store nurseries, and they would tend to carry some hackberry.
Okay.
Jung's may have it.
Jung's would be worth a checking. I'm sure they would have. There's a nursery called the Toddle Inn Nursery out by McFarland that sometimes will carry stuff like that. But go with the larger nurseries. Jung's is a very good one because they tend to, if they don't have it, they'll order it for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jill. And, of course, there are many others that could do it, too.
Oh, yes.
Johansson's might have them, too. So there's a number. Patrick in Greenfield, on to you now. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question, which I think while I was waiting, I kind of answered myself, but I'll ask it anyway. I want to put a trellis up for some grapevines. And what I've done, or what my son did, was put a post up for the trellis, but he's got it pretty far away from where the grapevine is moving out of the ground, and I was wanting to move it over to where the post was, but I think I'd probably be better off taking the post out and then just relocating as close to the grapevine as possible, right?
Usually there's building the trellis, and you have the posts, and those are set at varying spacing apart, probably every 10, 12 feet, and using a trellis wire, one at a height of about 4 feet or 3.5 feet, something like that, and that's where we would trellis. Right where the plant is, you can go by and put a steel rod there or a piece of conduit, and that way you can train that trunk of that grapevine real straight up to that wire.
Okay. And second question I had, I've got a garden that I would like to put tomatoes and other things out, but I'd like to try to put them out as early as possible. What about using black plastic to help build up heat and hold heat into the soil structure until it actually gets warm enough that they're on their own and they're okay?
Black plastic works good. It'll increase your soil temperature by about 4 degrees, and it keeps the weeds from growing because it'll kill those. Some people often start out the season, even now, and put clear plastic over, which acts as a miniature greenhouse and heats up the soil, and then they pull that off, and then they'll plant their tomato plants and use black plastic there.
Mm-hmm. So actually the clear plastic would be better right now?
It acts like a greenhouse.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. There's the one danger is, of course, you get the tomatoes. If you get a frost...
You're starting from ground zero again.
You're starting from ground zero. That's the problem. That's the problem.
I feel way behind. Last year I had my potatoes and radishes and those things planted by the 21st of March.
Whoa.
I'm a month behind already.
Well, we have Stacy with a Facebook question for you. My family and I are in a new-to-us home with a new-to-us yard, and I'd like to put some bulbs in for next year. Do I have to wait until next fall? I'm very excited to get busy.
I would check with some of your local garden centers. Sometimes they have bulbs which they actually put in refrigerators so they get the chilling, and you can still plant them out this spring. And because they've been chilled, they sometimes will produce some flowers, so you have that first shot. So you can do that now in the spring or even next fall when the garden when the bulbs come back on sale. But check with some of the local nurseries that have refrigerated areas, and they might be able to supply you with some bulbs.
Marie in Bayview, on to you now. Hi, Marie.
Hello there. I have a question, and I'm a fairly good gardener. I'm a flower soul kind of, you know, perennial gardener, and I helped my sister redo an area a couple of years ago, and we put this dead nettle in as a ground cover, and it keeps dying off, and I think its roots are being eaten by grubs. I'm not sure. I can't find the grubs, but, you know, all of a sudden there's just a plant on top that's dead. And no roots.
Well, no roots. Pretty good. Your assumption there is some type of grub. There are many types of grubs, and I would dig down in the soil as much as, maybe 6 inches or so below that plant, because some of the cutworms and some of the grubs will come up, feed on the surface during the night period, and then go back down into the ground, especially if you have a lot of leaf litter or organic matter in that soil. So that's my guess. Is what you probably have. I would check with a local garden center. Sometimes they have some granules that you can utilize for insect control, and that might be your answer.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks a lot, Marie, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We have some open lines. We can get you on pretty quickly. Or go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer today, our guest Bob Tomisch, recently retired Extension Horticulture Specialist on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest Bob Tomisch. Matt in Reedsburg, up next with a question for you.
Yeah, I just need to know what I can use to treat the Japanese beetles on apple trees. And do you know about using shade, possibly, or semi-shade?
The Japanese beetles are becoming a real problem here in southern Wisconsin, and they're slowly working their way northward. There's really no protective dust product that we can utilize. There are some calite clays you might want to try if you're trying to stay organic. We had a little bit of luck with that with one of the research stations here.
Is that like a dust or something? Or?
Well, you mix it with water, and it kind of comes out as a fine, you know, like slurry. A white slurry, and then it makes the plants look white. We use that that product, and you find that in Gardens Alive and some of the other organic stores. So you might want to try that. The other option is when they show up, we've had the best success with just including an insecticide like 7 or some product like that in that spray application, and that knocks the insects off. The problem is they come back in about 3-4 days, and so you have to come back and reapply.
Okay.
All right.
And what about shade? I mean, I've heard some people use semi-shade to persuade the Japanese beetles to go somewhere else.
Well, I don't always help, I can tell. sometimes by shade, did they say they might be using a shade cloth, which is a fine mesh? I know they've been using that on some garden plants where they've had problems, and it's, they call it Remay product, and it's kind of a white product, and it, the insects can't get through that to get to the plant material.
And that's fairly inexpensive. I mean, keeping it on, right. It'd be,
yeah,
that's the problem.
Well, you got to anchor it on the corners.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thanks for calling, Matt. And let's go to Sue next in Maribel. Hi, Sue.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about hostas. I have on the north side of my house, I would like to start a little hosta bed. And I'm wondering, once I put the hostas in, what do I put around them? Would it be some type of mulch and something to avoid the slugs?
Well, there's your answer right there. You can grow hostas without mulch. They will do fairly, and the whole idea is to mix a little organic matter into the soil ahead of time because they like that environment. Once you put mulches down, like bark chips and some of those, the slugs tend to work their way into that. There are some slug products that are out there on the market that you, and they usually come in granular form that you can spread it around the hostas, and when they come out to feed, they often will feed on those granules. So when you have hostas, if you use a lot of mulch, we usually find a lot of slugs.
Uh-huh. And did you say put in quite a bit of organic matter, work it into the soil when I plant the hostas?
I would go that route, yes. You can purchase that at any of the garden centers, and it'll kind of give you the mixing ratio. Mm-hmm. They like a little more organic matter in the soil because it helps hold the moisture, and hostas happen to be a plant that don't tolerate drought real well.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And John in Beloit, we turn to you now. Hi, John.
Hello, good morning.
What can we do for you?
I'm just kind of curious. I got a two-part question. I'll take my answer off the air, but I've never gardened before, and I got a nice backyard. And how far down should I till the soil? And what do I do with all the grass? Should I shovel that out first?
Yeah, well, there's a few approaches that people have used. Sometimes they'll take black plastic or an old carpet and throw it over the grass for about 6 weeks. But, you know, half your gardening season is going to be gone this year. So you can go down and get a sod cutter at some of the rental stores, and some people will cut the sod and roll that up. And sometimes you can even sell that for a couple bucks that somebody is doing some repairs, and they might be looking for a small amount of sod. But then you've got the sod off of there, and you've only taken probably an inch of soil at that time, so that's not going to hurt. And rather than coming in with a tiller, I hope you feel really up to it, I would suggest going in there with a good spading fork and getting down about 8 inches and turning that soil over, because a tiller only goes down maybe 3 inches at the most, and it really makes it nice and fluffy on top. But right below it, as those tines come down, they tend to beat that soil, and so you have a little hard pan in there. So the first time like that, if you can take a spade or a spading fork in there and do so many square feet each night, you won't have to work out at the gym, and the plants will be a lot happier.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Someone on our Facebook page sent in some pictures and don't have the you can see the picture. There was some tunneling done on the lawn.
Yeah, I'm looking. That one looks like voles or mice, field mice, that work their way in the lawn under the snow. And they eat those, they'll make those trails in there. Nothing really to worry about. because the grass will tend to fill in those areas as soon as we get enough heat here to get the grass growing.
Yep, should be okay. Dave in Prairie du Sac, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling about a tree we have in our front yard. It's a sunburst locust, and it's probably 30 feet high or so. We've had it out there for about 10 years or so, maybe 15. And the other day, a cable installer came through and cut a trench with this. They've got this knife that cuts into the soil about, you know, a foot or 18 inches and just goes up and down. And it cuts a real narrow trench. And I asked him to stay away from this tree. And he kind of tried to do that, but he's about, came about 6 feet from the tree trunk. And I'm sure he cut through some roots there. And what I'd like to know is if there's anything that we can do to, facilitate some regrowth of those roots and make sure that the tree stays healthy.
Well, first of all, I would suggest kind of putting that tree on a watering schedule for this growing season. So kind of watch each week. You need about an inch of rain. If you don't, you need to add some water to that to get those roots growing, especially where the knife went through. The
yep.
other problem that sometimes we see, and that's not that common, probably more on maples and some of the other trees, is occasionally we'll get some diseases coming in, but that doesn't kill the tree for the 4 or 5 years. It takes a little while for that to knock out. So I wouldn't really worry about that. Young, healthy tree like that, putting it on a good watering schedule will get those roots growing again, and I think you're off and running.
All right.
You don't think using, you know, some sort of soil amendment or something?
No, I wouldn't worry about that. If you did anything, there's a good bulletin on fertilizing landscape trees.
Okay.
And that's at thelearningstore.com. You go on your computer and pull that information down. It'll tell you the amount to put down. And if you put some down, it's got spacing in there. But make sure that where that knife went through, that you put some fertilizer there. That'll encourage root growth to happen in that area.
Okay.
And this season of the year, right now, when you cut roots, especially when you're transplanting trees and things like that, this is when they grow a lot of roots. From now through May. And so they'll kind of reestablish the roots even though they were cut.
Okay, good. Well, that's helpful.
Thank you very much for calling, Dave. Appreciate your call. We had on the Facebook page again, and anybody can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. John sent us a picture of some blue hepatica that are in bloom right now. And I'm not sure where he is in the state. They follow the crocuses, and he wants to promote blue hepatica, and they are beautiful flowers, and a Wisconsin native besides, so that's pretty cool. Nice picture. So that's at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to take a look. And David in Freeport, Illinois, on to you. Hi, David.
Good morning, and I appreciate your program.
Thank you.
I'm trying to establish a couple of ornamental mutation jack pines in my heavy clay soil here in Illinois. And I've been treating my wife's hydrangea with some sulfur. And I'm wondering, in these heavy clay soils that we have, if it would be a benefit to those jack pines.
Well, jack pines like a sandier type soil. What they do like sulfur is if you're using like ammonium sulfate.
I think it's a product that I bought over the counter shop.
Well, what I would do is, again, just like I suggested to the other person, there's a very good bulletin on the learningstore.com on fertilizing landscape trees. And in there, it would give you a suggestion of the amount of fertilizer to apply.
Okay.
And I would go that route, and that would tend to help those little jack pine out. You kind of took them out of their natural environment, so they're struggling a little bit, I would guess.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. And considering where their habitat usually grow, where they grow, I don't have that, and I'm looking for help.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, thanks much.
Yeah. The other thing that would even help in your situation is mulching around the base of the tree with bark chips or even pine needles.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Thanks, Dave. Al in Bayfield, your turn. Hi, Al.
Yeah, good morning. I have a ton of sumacs up here on my property, and Cut down a bunch of them, maybe over 60 last year. I didn't dig the roots out or anything, but I just cut them off because they were getting to be kind of too much. And I'm wondering what we do with the roots, what's left of the tree itself, in order to not get them to come back. And I'll take my answer off the phone. Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, when you have invasive plants like that, what you do is after you make the cut on the root is to treat it with, you can buy a brush killer at some of the garden centers or garden stores and put it right on that freshly cut, and that'll work its way down into the root system and knock it out. With sumac, they tend to be a little vigorous, so you might have to do a couple of times to really get ahead of the game. Some people have even used Roundup and spread that on the stump that you've just cut, and that'll knock that out too. So either the brush killer or the Roundup, and be persistent.
We have an email from Margaret in Shorewood. Last year, a couple of my tomato plants had what looked like septoria. We're on a small lot, not that many sunny spots for tomatoes, and the other really good spot appeared to have late blight in 2009. How long do I need to wait before planting tomatoes again where the septoria or the blight was?
Well, we usually like to have about a four-year rotation. And if you're really limited for space, one of the things you might want to consider doing is growing some tomatoes in a container. And that way you can purchase some soil and put it in the container and grow them up on the deck. As long as you're not producing so many tomatoes that you have to feed half the neighborhood, which some people do. But you can get by with maybe four or five plants to take care of all your needs. And so I'd look at going into a container a couple years and then maybe going back to that spot.
Yeah, and we did that last year at our home, and we had great luck. We had three or four plants growing in pots, and they did great. I mean, you can get 15, 20 pounds of tomatoes off a plant.
Oh, yeah, very easily.
Very easily.
Yep. And the other thing is because you're growing in a container doesn't mean you're not going to have any disease problems, because some of those things like late blight and some of those spores are airborne. And they come from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So, and you need to, about once a month, you need to be putting down a little bit of fertilizer in that pot, too.
Yep.
I've learned that the hard way. All right, let's go to Marge and Merrill. Marge, let's see. Marge, hi, thank you for calling.
We have a row of old pine trees next to our house, and I'm also noticing this in our woods, that over the last couple of months we've had a lot of drop of little branch ends, maybe 2 to 3 inches long, and just covering the ground. I was wondering what's causing that.
Well, it's kind of a self-pruning that's going on, and some of those little short branch pieces were inside the tree.
Okay.
That's usually one, and sometimes some squirrels will come in there and do some feeding as well and cut those off. But I'm guessing it's just kind of the part of the normal event of the tree. We look at the outer side, it looks great. On the inside, there are some, but they're not very efficient, and the tree has a way of getting rid of some of its own wood.
Okay, why such an unusual amount this year? The snow is just covered with them.
Yeah, well, it probably had to do with the winter that we've had, too.
Okay.
And it was fairly wet late season last year, so some of that little bit of growth got going, which normally hadn't, and then kind of run during the winter months, the plants are really in a droughty situation. So,
okay, so it's not an indication of disease at all?
I would not think so.
Okay, so it's just a normal drop. Okay, thank you.
Yep, right. Look the other way for a while and it'll all go away.
Okay. And an email from Anita in Stoughton. I've just moved here from Denver, Colorado. Want to start a new vegetable garden, a small one, with tomatoes. I brought my wall of water protective sleeves with me. How soon can I plant tomato transplants using the wall of water sleeves?
Well, even using the sleeves, that gives you some protection from the outer temperatures, but it's the soil temperature that plays a real role in the growth of plants. And with tomatoes, we need about 55 degrees. And that usually doesn't show up to about the 10th of May here in southern Wisconsin. In northern Wisconsin, we're looking around the 1st of June. So soil temperature plays a big role. And I believe last year, the soil did not warm up very fast. And even at the Hancock Research Station, which we were doing some research, we didn't see that 55-degree soil temperature occur till almost the 1st of June.
Yeah, And I'm, even in southern Wisconsin, I kind of like later than, you know, toward the end of May before I put tomatoes in.
Yep.
It's just no more frost issues.
Frost and then even the cold temperature, they just sit there and don't grow at all.
They don't do anything. Same with green peppers. That's even worse.
They like 60 degrees.
They like 60 degrees, you bet. Marie says, I've heard that cedar mulch is effective because the slugs are repelled. Is that true?
Yeah, there's some truth to that. The cedar, especially when it's in the fresher stage, it does smell good. It does reduce some of the slug problem that you have. But also there are some plants that are irritated by some of the cedar mulch type products. So yeah, it's kind of a give and take.
Mm-hmm. And Carrie says, I'm wondering if I can plant my roses now, or is it still too early? I have a lot of foliage on them, and I'd like to get them out before they get flower buds on them.
Well,
of course, she doesn't say where she is, but it doesn't matter.
Right now in the box stores, I'm seeing a lot of roses, and they're all leafed out. And if we set them out and we have a frost, a lot of those leaves will get frosted and get killed. So if they're dormant, which you probably will buy at a garden center, without any leaves, you can plant those out right now, and they'll kind of adjust to the growing season. Those that are leafed out, I would tend to hold them until, usually about Mother's Day, and then set them out, because otherwise you're going to have some frost damage.
And let's turn to Kate and Nina Manasha now. Hi, Kate. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a very tall, very old pine tree in my yard that was snapped in half during Sunday's storm. The top half fell in my yard, and the bottom half is still standing. And I wonder if there's any chance that the bottom half of that old tree is going to live and maybe grow.
Most likely not.
Oh.
If it's already broke off in half, I would suggest finishing the job, mm-hmm. and then have another tree brought in.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. And Luba in Madison. Hi.
Yes, I have two questions.
Okay.
One, are beets considered a cold weather vegetable? That's number one. Number two, if planting now or earlier, did you cultivate and ready your soil for planting last fall, for planting this spring?
I have done that to a small part of the garden, and if you work the soil up in the fall and kind of have it all ready, and then I just would, we have 3-4 days of dry weather, you can come in with the tiller and just kind of loosen it up again and plant into that. So that's one way of getting an earlier jump on the gardening. As for beets, they tend to be a cool season crop. They fall in with the spinach and some of those things, so you could plant those now.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. And we have an email or Facebook question from Mary Beth. There's so much to read about companion planting. How important is it to plant some vegetables together and keep others apart?
Yeah, that's a question that often comes up. And the reason many people try companion planting is to deter certain insects. There is some success with it. If you tend to mix up the vegetables in there, you haven't got a big target. And we're going to use broccoli as an example where, you have a whole row of broccoli and that brings in the cabbage butterflies. But certain plants, even though we try to companion plant, and I'll use broccoli again, the insect is attracted to the smell of the broccoli, a certain alkaloid that's given off, that odor, and that they'll find that one plant in a whole cluster of others. But when it comes to some of the other insects that are flight insects that kind of come in, you might have some success with mixing the plants, but don't expect to have complete insect control.
Okay. And Terry in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to ask Bob, this question would be in regards to, I want to make a nice potted nursery mix so I can put in bare root nursery stock, just some smaller little shrubs, 2 to 3 gallon size pots. I'm going to use some commercialized bag, basically decompose, like a pine bark mix that you could buy. But I also have access to an electric sterilizer for the black dirt. I want to add black dirt thinking that it'll keep the moisture longer in those black pots out in the sun rather than just using the pine bark mix. And I was just wondering what Bob's thought is for both. Will it kill the weed seeds, the sterilization, and does it deteriorate some of the good microbes or whatever, you know, in the soil when you do that with that sterilization?
Well, the sterilization, you have to get it hot enough to kill the weed seeds in it. And a lot of the potting mixes we buy in the garden centers and stores, that's all been sterilized, so you don't have to deal with some of those pest problems. Your idea of mixing it with bark chips is a very good one. I'm not real up on the mixture. I'm guessing it's somewhere about 50-50. You could check at some of the garden stores that do pot it because they get a lot of their plant material in bare root, and they might be willing to share their secret of what combination that they've been using.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling. And Carolyn emailed and says, my parsley made it through the winter and it's growing nicely, but someone said it will not taste good the second year. Is that so?
Herb question. Okay, with some of those parsleys and that, sometimes they might be a little bitter earlier in the season because they've gone through that chilling and some of that. But I would, you know, tend to work on it and taste it, and you make that choice as you go along during the growing season.
Yeah, it's just good. It'll lose some of that bitterness as the time goes on.
Right.
Yeah, there we go. Gary in Menominee, hello to you.
Hello.
Hi.
I have about 8 feet tall evergreen bushes in my front yard, and they have a flat, they're not needle-like, but they're flat. And I don't know, maybe it might be white cedar, I don't know what they are. But anyhow, they're about 8 feet tall, and the deer have eaten all around the center. They couldn't reach the top, and of course the bottom was covered with snow. Will they come back, or do I have to cut all these beautiful shrubs down?
Well, the deer will come back.
Yeah, the deer will come back for sure.
I know that, yeah.
It all depends how much they've eaten off. I would go and fertilize the shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
They will green up. I have a couple in my yard that there's a row of five, and there's two they love. And I was looking at them this morning, and I was thinking, do I get rid of those two or whatever? But they've eaten them on other years, and they have leafed out. But if they really get into the center where they get past any new buds, then you're kind of out of luck.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look like they've gotten to the bark part. No. They've just on the, you know, just nibbled off the whole, all the green. You know?
Well, rather than sacrifice those trees right away, I would suggest, again, there's another bulletin on fertilizing shrubs,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be some suggestions in there, the amount to apply, and I would go that route. And then water the plants, especially during the growing season now,
mm-hmm.
and see if they do regrow some of that growth. It all depends on how far in those deer have chewed on those branches.
I see. Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll get some more calls here. You can join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org or go to the Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I'm Larry Mealer with Bob Tomisch, my guest today, horticulturist, extension specialist, now retired, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy you're with us here on the Ideas Net. I'm Larry Mealer, my guest today, Bob Tomisch, horticulturist. Great to have him with us, too. Thank you for listening in. Mary in Schofield has a question for you, Bob. So let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm planning on planting some everbearing strawberries as soon as it warms up. And I'm wondering, the first year, should I go in and remove the blossoms for better root development?
Usually with ever-bearing strawberries, once they've been in the ground for about 30 days and then they start, if they blossom after that, I'd harvest the fruit. The reason that we pinch off the flowers on our regular strawberry varieties, our summer-bearing type, is so that they get all the energy into a good root system and then produce a lot of runners, because that's where we get all of our fruit off. In the case of ever-bearing, they produce very few runners, and they produce only flower stalks during the growing season. So I'd give them about 30 days to get established, and then I would start letting the flowers go to fruit.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. And Ruth in Wauwatosa. Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Late last summer, we planted an autumn blaze maple.
Yeah.
And then a deer came along and rubbed his antlers on one side of it. What can we do to help it recover?
Okay. I have the same problem in my yard sometimes. what I suggest doing, as soon as you, and this is some for future reference, is that whenever the deer work their antlers, which is usually in the fall, I would suggest coming in there with a pruning compound, and you can buy that product either in a spray or in a paste. And what you're going to do is try to protect what's left there in terms of cambial cells. Even now, even though things have dried out a little bit, I would still come in there, and that's about the only time I suggest pruning paint is on the deer wounds like that. If he's only rubbed on one side, it's going to heal over, and that tree will survive. But I've seen times where they've gone all the way around the tree, and then you're out of luck.
Yeah.
He only got one side, and at least it's the side away from what we can see, so we don't see it. What can we do to protect it next year? Can we put that wrap around it?
Yeah, there's some plastic wrap materials that you can use, or any of the wrap products. Some people say that even if you put a post or a piece of conduit next to the tree, when they start rubbing that sound, they don't like to hear that, and so they leave that tree alone. But there, if you go down to the garden centers, they have some plastic wraps. We were at a place yesterday, and they had some plastic tubing that they were putting around the trees, and they were all going up about 5 feet on the tree. They didn't have any branches, and they were in an area with a lot of deer problems, and they were having success with that.
Okay, and just in reference to the lady who was starting the fruit orchard, we had a Reliance tree on the west side of Milwaukee, Reliance peach, that did beautifully. The kids picked peaches out of the second-story bedroom.
That's a good story,
yeah.
Ruth.
Yeah. And
they were wonderful peaches, very delicious.
Oh, they are. Yeah, if you ever get a chance to go to places where they grow peaches and when they're ripe, the juice runs down your arm. And I had one year that produced real well before it bit the dust.
Succumbed.
But Reliance is fairly hardy, and there's also some Harrow Beauty, which if you can find it, is another fairly hardy variety. So there's a couple you can try if you want.
All right.
I canned many quarts of peaches off of that tree.
Oh, send us a quart.
Send us the address.
then it got peach curl.
Yep. That's a disease that once a tree gets a peach leaf curl, usually they slowly die.
Start up the chainsaw?
Yeah, just about.
Yeah.
Yep, that was the end of it. But while it was growing, it did beautifully.
Thanks, Ruth.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. We have a Facebook question from Mary. I don't understand why if I plant a seed from a Honeycrisp, I am told the apples from that tree will not be like the Honeycrisp from the store. Even if the tree was pollinated from other Honeycrisp trees planted from a seed.
Well, first off, apples do not take pollen from their own cultivar. So the pollen that came there was not from a Honeycrisp. It was probably from a flowering crab, and that's where you get this genetic diversity. The apples never come true when you plant seeds. You may go down to the farmer's market and get the most beautiful apple and you eat it. I'm going to save those seeds and plant them, and you do, and 5-6 years down the road, you end up with disappointment. So that's why they graft apple. If you want to continue a Honeycrisp, you go down and buy a Honeycrisp, and those have all been grafted onto a rootstock.
Chuck in Highland, hello.
Good morning, guys.
Morning. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thanks for taking the call. I have a question. We have two blue spruce in our yard. Both were planted about the same time, around 20 years ago. One is doing beautifully. It only had a bit of wood mulch put under the tree a few times. The other one we established a flower bed under quite a few years ago, and consequently we've hauled dirt in several times to replenish the flower bed. Now the tree looks like it's dead about halfway up. It's not putting any needles on. It looks really bad. the branches are flexible yet. They're rubbery, even the small ones. They're not like brittle as though they were dead, but they look dead. There are no needles on them.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a program, and I only caught the last part of it. It was a landscaping program, and these guys were doing some work in a yard that had existing trees, and they there was a couple of spruce trees with the same issue, and what they did was remove this topsoil or this dirt from the top over the roots, and they literally actually pressure washed down to the top of the roots and exposed them, and their thought was the tree would pop back. Any truth to that, or do I want to get out the chainsaw?
Well, that's a new one. The problem usually with blue spruce is there's a fungal canker that gets on the needles, then they start needle drop, usually start from the bottom and work their way, the disease works its way up. We have no pesticide that we can apply to protect the trees. And blue spruces are actually out of their element here. They like a fairly dry environment, and that's where the mountainous areas where they do very well. And we bring them to humid Wisconsin, and those diseases get started. Most trees do not do well when you keep adding soil to the top, because what happens is you're burying the roots deeper and deeper, those feeder roots, and eventually it'll cause a problem of even killing the tree. This power washing idea, I wouldn't put money in it.
I wouldn't go that far, but it wouldn't hurt maybe to try to take some of that dirt off, wouldn't it?
But it's already up the tree, and guessing. The only place you can look is at the tip of the branch if it looks like there's still a bud there, but then the rest of that branch back is going to be needleless, and so it's not going to be very aesthetically pleasing.
There you go. Chuck's.
Well, chainsaw, huh, guys?
I'd consider it, that's
for
sure.
Yeah, I would too.
Oh, darn. Well, as a replacement tree, then, a blue spruce or not native, but something along that line,
yep.
What would be a good one for southwestern Wisconsin?
There's a Black Hill spruce, which does very well. Grows fairly fast. Yeah, some of the spruces grow slowly, but I look at the Black Hill spruce or the white spruce.
Black Hill or the white spruce?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Yep. Thanks, Chuck. John in Sparta, hello to you.
Morning.
Morning.
I have a apple tree that I put in. It's a apple or Honeycrisp. Anyways, I know just when you're pruning them, there's a water vein branch goes up to,
water sprout.
Yeah. How do you determine which one that is, and when is the right time to prune that off?
Well, first of all, we should be doing our pruning in February and March before we have insect activity. Season's late this year and we're still doing it. But when you're pruning, I usually suggest take off any suckers that come from the ground around the base. Second are water sprouts, and those are branches that grow vertically straight up. And depending on the health of the tree, they can be anywhere from 10 inches straight upward up to 7 or 8 feet, depending on the health of the tree. So you want to remove those next, and then after that, kind of open up the tree, taking out certain branches that probably crossing over and things like that. But yes, the water sprouts are the ones that need to go, and they grow very vertical.
There can be several then.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Hundreds on some trees.
Okay, great. Okay, I was wondering about that. And then also on a blueberry bush, what is the life expectancy of one of those?
You're in Sparta?
Yeah.
Yeah, you usually have acid soils over in your neck of the woods there, so they should do pretty well. A blueberry plant, I know some growers that after about 20 years or so or 25 years look at replacing the plants because they start getting real woody and less productive. Just saying that, I know some old-timers that had some that were up to 50 years old. But for the most part, when you talk to commercial growers, they look at replacing a plot of blueberries at about between 25 and 30 years.
Okay, and is it better to have more than one plant? Or?
You mean cultivar? Yes, having a couple cultivars will ensure a little better pollination, but although they do self.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. A caller wanted to share that she saw a spruce that had been damaged. It resprouted and did beautifully.
That's what I was saying. Check the ends of the branches. If there's buds there, then you've got a growing point. But if they've lost the needles, any place the needles have lost, they're not going to grow new needles there. It's only from new buds.
And Lee in Wisconsin Rapids, hi.
Good morning. My question is, can a tree go to seed so heavily that it actually kills itself?
Well, that isn't quite what's happening, but you're pretty close to right. Usually trees, before they die, that last year, and they probably are dying because of a fungal infection in the roots or in the trunk or something like that, they produce a whole lot of seeds to perpetuate themselves. And you'll notice that on certain trees. They'll be just loaded with seeds, and then that's the end. But the seeds aren't what the production of seed isn't killing us, because they've got some other problem.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lots of things to cover here on Garden Talk. Bob Tomisch, our guest. Bob, horticulturist, been with the University of Wisconsin Extension for many, many years. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bob Tomisch, horticulturist, and he's here to answer your questions. I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234. Shirley in Whitehall's been waiting a while, Bob, so let's go to Shirley. Hi, Shirley.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have critters in my yard. I have moles, and I have voles. I have striped gophers, and I have pocket gophers. A couple of questions. I went to a store, and I bought some stuff to get rid of moles and voles, and they say it's pellets impregnated with camphor. Now, is this, if I use this, is this going to affect the edibility of my garden, number one? And number two, do you have any other suggestions for getting rid of these? I'm getting swamped.
Yeah, all those critters. There are some bulletins on those in terms of managing, but when it comes to voles and moles, if you can keep your lawn cut fairly short in the fall, this will reduce that population because if you have a cat or two around, so goes the vole. Pocket gophers are the worst enemies. I had them when I lived up at River Falls, and they're really hard to get rid of. You almost have to trap. I know the camphor they're talking about, you're supposed to drop it down in the holes, and what they do is they just move a little farther out is the whole theory behind it. And it isn't going to impact your gardening activity or anything like that. But the best way to get rid of pocket gophers is to find somebody that will trap them for you.
All right. There you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Michelle in Prairie du Sac. Hello.
Hi. I was calling for three reasons. First of all, I live in a very sandy area, and we grow strawberries very nicely. In my patch, one area does better than the other, and I've noticed that I've had it in an area that had compost more before. So I'm trying to move my garden, and I want to get a load of compost in, and I want to till in my sandy loam. What do you think that'll do to my strawberries?
Well, if you had a spot there that they weren't growing, one thing when compost, we want to avoid the walnut types of compost. If somebody had walnut leaves or something like that in there, that'll be a deterrent for strawberries. So, but overall, if you get some good compost, good black soil, mix it in. But strawberries, if you have a good sandy soil, just put them on a good irrigation watering program, and they should do very well for you without even using compost.
Okay, they seem to be small, you know, in some areas. When we did water them, and like I said, this is the areas that had more compost, this seemed to do better. So we were just wondering if it was fertilizer or something.
Yeah, well, no, the compost, where you had the compost, it holds the water in the soil a little better. And so, whereas the sand tend to leach it down. There's some math in terms of irrigating. You need about 0.6 gallons per square foot. And in sandy soils...
Per week, is that?
That's per week. Mm-hmm. And in sandy soils, you need to up that just a little bit. And so we're looking at maybe 0.4 of a gallon every 4 days and per square foot. Also, when it comes to from the time that they are at that white stage, if you double your water application, that'll increase the size of the berries. But berry size is directly proportionate to the amount of water they have available.
Ah, okay, so that would probably work with raspberries, too, because my plants looked great because we had a lot of rain last year, and then during the fall, it kind of tapered off, and I really didn't get very good raspberries. So they're ever-bearing raspberries. Is that why?
That's why. Okay. Could be one of the reasons why.
Okay, and I have two more questions. One is concerning apple trees. When you prune an apple tree, you want it to get the top ones growing toward the sun off, and the ones going down, you want to leave those, correct?
Not pointy down. You want them the branches horizontal, if you can.
Okay. I talked to somebody that worked at the UW a year ago, and he said that you don't have to put pesticides on if you put these baggies over the blossoms. Have you heard of something like that?
You don't. Okay, that's bagging apples. And the way you bag apples, and I usually do one tree for demonstration out at the West Madison Research Station, is when the apple's about the size of a dime. Yeah, you can buy in some of the catalogs, they have little bags you slip over. I go down and use sandwich bags that have the zipper on because that gives me a little thicker area, and I slide it over. But first of all, I cut the corners off on the sandwich bag so water can leak out because there's always moisture given off by the apple. Slide it up over the fruit and put a little staple on each side, and that way when insects or diseases get there, they don't make it to the fruit. So that's called bagging apples. There's some bulletins on bagging apples if you went and did a search on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And how long do you keep them on when you zip them on?
You leave them on. You don't zip them on because the zipper will open up slowly. You got to put a little paper staple in each side of the stem. Okay. You leave it on till you pick them. I've even picked them, and you can place them in storage with the bag on.
And that plastic doesn't affect it at all with the sun beating down on it?
Nope, it doesn't cook them.
Awesome. Okay, and then my last one is a pear tree. I have two pear trees, and they must be the same variety. Neither one, I've had them for a good 10 years, and neither one has produced any fruit on it whatsoever. And I was told to take a baseball bat and, kind of really,
whack them.
Yeah. Well, okay, with a pear tree, they tend to take 8 or 10 years before they get to start fruiting, but you can do some things. Are all your branches vertical on your pear?
Yes.
You don't have any horizontal ones, huh?
I probably pruned them off.
Yeah, well, those are the ones you were supposed to save.
Okay.
Anyway, if you have a vertical or try to get horizontal branches on your pear tree, and there's a couple ways of getting them to fruit early. And I have some pears, and I have fruit on them at the fourth year. Two things. One is you can call what's called ringing, R-I-N-G-I-N-G, and you take a jackknife and you, 1st of June, date is important. Can't go fishing, shopping, anything on the 1st of June. Anyway, you go out there, take the jackknife on that scaffold branch, squeeze it till you feel it go through the bark. When you hit the wood, it's going to be fairly firm, and you make a ring all the way around. You've cut the bark. Water travels in the wood part, and the sugars that are made in leaves and hormones travel back out in the bark region. And because you've just cut it, it builds up a concentration of sugars in that end of the branch. And the 15th of June is when, hey, let's make either vegetative growth or flowers. There's a high sugar content. It'll stimulate flower production. So that's how you force apples and pears into blooming. That's called ringing. The other way to do it is take the branch, 1st of June again, point it, pull it down so it's actually below the horizontal level, and you leave it tied in that position till the 4th of July, and then you let it back up. Sugars will concentrate in that branch as well.
Okay, because I'm just thinking, when you put a mark all the way around a bark, doesn't that kill the tree?
No, we're talking about not as bad as a baseball bat. Anyway, what you're doing is cutting it. Within a month, that's going to heal back up. You don't peel any bark off. You just make a cut.
Okay.
All right, there you go.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate your call. Sarah emailed us, when should I plant chicory and lacinato kale? I have an Italian seed packet written in Italian, of course. I thought they both were cold weather crops, but it looks like the seed packet says to start later in the season.
With some of those, They think of it in terms of planting earlier in the spring, starting the seeds. You can do it about now and in a week or so. But also they do better during cooler temperatures. So they're going to do fairly well till June or so. And then that, again, they would plant again in around the 15th of August so that you have the cool temperatures of fall, and that's going to give you a better quality vegetable.
All right.
So that's why it says to plant later.
Nico in Lansing, Iowa. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi there. I have two questions. Quickly, we have some purple leaf sand cherries, and I've noticed this early spring that they've developed these rather large black cankers on them that are almost like almost charcoal-y.
Yep.
And I was wondering what that's about.
Okay, that's a fungus.
Uh-huh.
The real nice name is called black knot of plum.
Uh-huh.
Or if you want to be crude, you say it's poop on a stick,
because
that's what it looks like. Anyway, the only way to get rid of that is to prune it out of the tree.
Okay.
I think you're talking about having these are ornamentals, right?
Yes, yes.
And wherever you see that black knot, you go back a foot behind it, down the tree, and then cut it off, because it's probably operating within that bark and cambial layer almost that far. So.
Okay. Great.
Pruning is about the only way to control it.
All right, thank you. And my other question is, I'm just about to plant a little orchard. I got the deer fence up, and I'm ready to go. But I've read two different things about when you plant bare root fruit trees. In one case, in many cases, I hear that you're supposed to, you know, improve the soil a great deal. But I've also read a differing opinion that, you know, you should try to get them going in exactly the soil that they're ultimately going to have to grow in long term.
Yep, your last statement is more correct.
Okay.
Because if you have all the soil the same, the roots will tend to grow out because of the environment. If you amend the soil just in a small ball area, they maybe have high organic matter or something, and then all the roots will stay very local. So I tell people, put whatever soil you dug out of the hole and dig a generous hole, 2-3 times the whatever the roots happen to be. Because in the garden, you fluff your soil up so the tomatoes grow better. You want to fluff your soil up so the apples grow better. Go to work, then put the same soil back in. I would stake the tree. You go down and get 3/4-inch conduit, put a stake right next to the tree. You can pull that conduit out in about 2 years and put it on a good water and fertilizer program and do some good training. I'd get a couple of bulletins on training apple trees, and that way you'll have the type of tree that you want to manage.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to the learningstore.com.
Yep.
Learningstore.com, you'll get those extension publications. We have Jonathan in Sherwood next. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Bob and Larry. I've got a place in Spring Green, and I have a buddy out there who lives in Lone Rock, and he has an unlimited supply of little white pines that he said, help yourself. I'm wondering what's the best way and time to transplant them?
Tomorrow.
Oh, good. if I can dig into the...
Yeah, I would, you look at the stem of the tree, and if you have an inch, I'll use an inch, then you want to go 1 foot out from the tree to cut the roots.
Uh-huh. And should I, we only live like a mile apart, but should I, like, put them in water as I move?
No.
No?
Just pull them out, and if you can throw some, get some moist grass or hay or something and just throw it over the plants. You're going to haul them in an open truck or what, trailer or what?
Yeah.
Well, then I'd throw a tarp over them.
Uh-huh.
Just
okay.
Because those needles are leaves, and as the wind blows by, they'll dry out. So you're hauling them from Spring Green to...
From Lone Rock to Spring Green, like a mile or something.
Well, then I wouldn't sweat it too much.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Paulette in Grays Lake, hi to you.
Hello, Bob and Larry.
Hi.
My husband and I purchased an autumn blaze in April of 2005 at a nursery, and the nursery, we went out, picked out the kind we wanted, and then the nursery came out and planted it, and that was in 2005, and it has never blazed. I understood that this tree was supposed to have really outstanding fall foliage, and all we get is... it looks like what the silver maple does in the fall. It's yellowish. So my husband thinks that the tree is still too young. I think it's...
No, you've got what happened. My guess is that when the tree you got is not an autumn blaze. And usually they graft autumn blaze onto rootstock, and silver maple happens to be one of the rootstocks that they use, and that has a yellow leaf color. So probably way back in the nursery, somebody wasn't paying attention, and it ended up that the graft did not take, but the rootstock grew a stem, and that's why you got the yellow leaves on it. You have to go talk to the nursery real kind, because it's got yellow leaves on now. It's going to have yellow leaves 50 years from now.
Okay, that's what I thought, that we got the wrong tree.
Yep, you misidentified.
Okay.
Well, the nursery probably, when they sold it, was bare root or not leafed out, but that's what happened, is the graft did not take.
Oh, the graft didn't take, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was about, the tree was good size when we bought it. It was about 15 feet high.
Yep.
And they had it, as I said, they had it all balled up, and it was in an area with a lot of autumn blaze, and we picked out the one we wanted. So the trunk is smooth like a red maple, but the color is more like a silver maple.
Yep.
That's what you got.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, thanks for your help.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Sorry about that. We have an email from Barb in Green Bay. We bought three little prairie fire crabapple trees yesterday that are already flowering. Our soil's still very wet, all the snow, and from all the snow recently, and it's still very cold and windy here. How soon can we put the trees in the ground?
Well, you're at a toss-up, and if you put them out now, you probably won't have much for flowers, but that's going to happen one way or another anyway. I would put them in the ground as long as you've got them, and just hope for a good flower crop next year.
Also, she says, in Green Bay again, we have a black lace elderberry 2 years old that's already outgrown its space. It's about 7 foot wide and tall and wide. I pruned it back to 18 inches last spring, but it grew 6 feet again last summer. Can we move it?
Sure you can, and now's the time to do it. You can dig up as much as the root of with it as you can, and I would go out probably a foot and a half and cut all the roots around and then slowly work that soil ball out. Don't worry about if the soil falls off of the roots, because we can move them almost to bare root right now for the next week or two before growth gets going. But I'd move it. They're a beautiful plant. I've seen some, and they're really beautiful.
Terry from Milwaukee called. Remember, we were talking about the caller who had, I think it was apples tree, with all of vertical branches. Terry says, well, you could weight down the branches with filled water bottles to make them horizontal. Can you do that?
Yeah, you use cement blocks. The problem is that when you start out and they're fairly vertical, you can start pulling them down. You don't want to pull it all down in one day.
Yeah.
And what I suggest is each time every 2-3 days, you kind of shorten that string a little bit, and you can get them to grow horizontal. You have to leave them tight in that position the entire growing season once they get down to that horizontal, and because they'll generate new wood and bark in that cambial zone in that position. And so next October, so then you can take the weight off.
Ken in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi, guys. I've been trying for years to call in, and I finally got in Garden Talk. How about that?
Good.
I feel fortunate. Should I go to a casino or should I buy a lottery ticket? What do you think?
I'd go a lottery ticket.
Hey, okay, I went through Eau Claire last night about 11 o'clock.
Well, good. You should have dropped in. I was still awake. But anyhow, quick question for you about tomato blight from last year. We had it real bad. We had a nice crop of tomatoes, but the blight really kind of got us at the end. Yeah, people have told me we should just skip planting tomatoes for a year, or what do you think? It's a fairly large garden we could plant in a different area, so what's your opinion on that?
Well, I would plant in a different area of the garden. The late blight comes in, it's an airborne type of fungus, and some years it's worse than others, so I would tend to rotate that tomato. I would also suggest using mulch around the base of it to give you a little additional protection. And also, there are some varieties, and some of the garden centers are now carrying them that are growing late blight resistant. They'll call them resistant varieties, actually tolerant to a certain degree, and they'll get the disease a little less soon than some of the others.
Okay. And what kind of mulch are you suggesting to use?
You can use any.
Is a wood chip okay? Something like that?
Wood chip, grass clippings, anything like that. Or even people use black plastic. That way they don't have to weed around them.
Oh, okay. And then I had one other one, and that was we have a flowering a fruit, was it non-fruit bearing flowering crab apple, if I said that right. And it looks like the rabbits had some joy with it this past winter as they went around the entire thing. Between a ring of the bark is off all the way around. Is that tree not going to survive, or can I do anything to save it?
Well, you got a last hope here. I would put some pruning paste on there just in case there's some cambial cells left there. But the chance of it surviving is going to be less than 10%. It depends on how bad they girdled it. The other thing is it'll leaf out, and it'll die about the 10th of June.
Oh, really? Okay. So what did you call it, pruning paste? Is that what you
said? Pruning compound. You can find that at most garden centers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you much. I'll see you at the casino.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have Shelley in New Auburn. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. I have a question about a bleeding heart plant. It's on the north side of our house, and it's growing to where it's unmanageable. It's so big. And I'm wondering a good time to split it, and if I need to find another northern part of the house to put it on, the split-off section.
Okay, first of all, you don't have to go to the northern side. You can go to any side of the house. They'll tolerate some sun. Number two is the plant is probably, what, about 2 inches tall now?
Oh, it's about 3 feet tall and about 5 feet or so in circumference. It's huge. No.
Yeah, but it dies back every year to the ground.
Oh, right now, at this time.
Yeah, yes. It should be just coming up. I'd go
just
and
barely
I'd.
Barely out.
Yep. I would take a sharp spade and cut through and cut it in four pieces and then move each of the pieces.
Okay.
And do it now while it's small. Yep.
Yep. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have a Facebook question from Susan, I have a large 34-inch diameter heavy metal fire pit. Could that be used to sterilize garden soil and used potting soil?
No. Usually you can use an oven, but you want to move the stove outside because when you sterilize it, it has a lot of odor. You have to have some type of sealed container and then heat it up, and you have to get the temperature up above about like 190 degrees.
Terry and Kiwani, hi.
Hi, gentlemen. I have a king crimson red maple in my backyard that's about 15 feet high, and I should have called last year, but I didn't. Last year, some of the bark had split on it from my husband hitting the tree with the lawnmower a couple of years back, and some of the sections of the tree didn't have leaves on them. They did have buds, but the buds never opened. This year, higher up on the tree, we noticed that the bark is split again. And I'm just wondering if this tree is toast now or if we can save it.
It's on its way to toast.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you that. There's a couple things going on. It's it not only has the lawnmower injury in it, but it sounds like it's got a fungal problem that's working its way up the tree. And so I think you need to write that one off.
Okay, there you go. Thank you for calling. And, Bob, thank you. You'll come back. In fact, you are. We got a date, May 20th.
Somewhere in there we're scheduled.
May 20th, I believe he's back. Bob Tomish, horticulturist, great to have him along, and he'll be back in about a month, and we will do this all over again with him. Just to let you know what's coming up the first part of next week, first on Monday, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody will be here to get you in shape or stay in shape with the spring activities. So that's at 11 o'clock and right up until 12:30. Then on Tuesday, Phil Pelletieri, extension entomologist, comes back to talk about the fascinating world of insects. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.